Hello and welcome to the Recovering from Religion podcast. Our mission here is to offer hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. What follows is the audio from selected videos posted on Recovering from Religion's YouTube channel. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
This week we have, as I said before, two guests, and I'm going to introduce firstly Rebecca Williams. And a lot of you may already know her because she has been here before. And of course, we keep calling her back because she is amazing. So I'm just going to read you a very brief bio, just a couple of words for you to locate what she does and who she is really. So Rebecca Williams is a licensed marriage and family therapist in California. She's the owner of Inland Empire Couple Counseling and specializes in helping mixed belief and religious / secular couples have connected, intimate, and united relationships. Rebecca is offering a free mini course to help couples set the foundation for their united mixed belief relationship. And I believe, Eric, you're about to add the link to the chat. Yes, thank you. And now, Eric, please introduce our amazing Priya.
Yes, Priya Westerman Otero is a licensed mental health counselor and substance use counselor. She is freaking awesome. I'm reading that right here from the description. She's freaking awesome. I love talking with her. She's in the process of becoming an AASECT certified sex therapist. She specializes in individual, relationship, and alcohol substance abuse counseling and sex therapy with an emphasis in alternative relationships. Rebecca, Priya, welcome to RFRX again.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be back.
Thank you. Thank you. What an intro.
You guys are worth every single word. So we're going to be talking about guilt and regret today. Kind of where would we start off with this conversation?
Okay. So to start off with, I want to make a distinction here that we're talking specifically about religious guilt. I mean, there's lots of guilt and shame out there, and we'll probably touch on some of that. But for the purposes of today, I want to look at religious guilt like it's an invasive species.
Oh,
so, right. Like a weed or, you know, one of those...
those fish in Michigan or something that jump into
Yes.
the boat.
Yes, in our area, there's mussels. If you go to any
zebra mussels.
Yes, yes. And you have to get your boat inspected before you can go. I say it like I have a boat, but still, it's a big deal.
And the murder hornets. Who could possibly forget about the murder hornets? Right. Thank you, 2021. So for 2020. Yeah.
Your religious guilt is a non-native species that will take over. And getting rid of it is not just recognizing it or maybe like killing one of the murder hornets or one of those zebra mussels. But you have to have a bigger program to deal with the problem on a bigger scale. Or if we're thinking weeds, like you can't just pull one, you have to be persistent at making sure that your garden, I got too many metaphors going on here.
No, I always
what we're
kind
talking
of,
about today is like identifying and rooting out your religious guilt.
I always kind of, when I am talking in the support groups, I always feel like there are things that come up from my religious past or stemming from religion. And I like what you just said, I feel like it's a garden that I have to weed some of these things out. They're always popping up and like, what the heck? That's not what I want in my life. I got to pull it out. So I like your gardening metaphor. I like the murder horn. It's a little bit better, but I like the gardening metaphor.
Okay. And then Priya is going to talk about the difference between guilt and shame.
Mm-hmm. Hello, lovely people. My name is Priya. My pronouns are she, her, hers. So first off, I want to make sure that we're very clear on what is actually the difference between guilt and shame, because I think a lot of people tend to kind of confuse them, or they use them kind of interchangeably, and they're actually incredibly different. So guilt generally is an emotion, it's a feeling, and it's associated with, I made a mistake and I feel bad about that. So it could be because of decisions that I've made, something that maybe I've said, And then as a result, I feel guilt. Now, shame goes deeper. So instead of it being due to like a specific action that I may have taken, it is that I am the mistake. So it's kind of like an overarching belief system that I have Oh, wow. About myself. So because of that, shame tends to be much more difficult to address because it just goes so deep. And I'll have conversations with people and they'll tell me like, no, because this is how it is. And they really honestly believe that these things are true about themselves or even about other people. So shame, what makes it so problematic is the fact that it feeds on secrecy, it feeds on silence, and it feeds on judgment. So a lot of us, we suffer in silence. So the more we do that, the less likely it is that we're actually going to be able to resolve those feelings. So I encourage anyone to find someone in your life. It could be a friend, a family member, a coworker, support group, anyone that you feel that you can trust to be able to talk about these things and really process them with somebody else. Because I can't remember what's the quote of like, you know, like someone who like is their own doctor is like, I don't know. There's a freaking quote, like old as hell. You can't be your own therapist is what I'm trying to say. Don't okay. be your own therapist. I can't be my own therapist and I'm a damn therapist. So like you got to talk to people, get it out. Challenge what it is that you're telling yourself. Really ask the person like, I'm feeling this kind of way. What do you think about it? Odds are they're going to be like, yo, like that makes no sense. And then you'd be like, really? And you can challenge thoughts that you've believed for years and years and years that way. Talk about that shame. Don't hide from it. Don't deny it. And don't beat yourself up about it either. I feel a lot of people fall into a cycle. It's called feeling bad, not feeling bad. So instead of really addressing the feeling, we kind of put ourselves into more of a lovely shame spiral. And we feel bad about the fact that we feel bad because we tell ourselves, I shouldn't feel this way. This is not right that I feel this way. And it just, you're not really going to get anywhere that way. So I encourage anybody like to really talk to somebody. Like I said, this group or any kind of support group is huge if you maybe don't have the friends and family, because let's say they are still involved in religion and you feel that you don't have the ability to really talk to them without them coming in and trying to like shove something down your throat. Well, okay, let's go to maybe some outside people in that case.
So it sounds like shame is kind of an identity, a characteristic that we take on, and then guilt is like something we may just simply made an event that we made a mistake on or a thought we made a mistake. Is that like it sounds so much deeper, like you had mentioned the shame part sounds so much deeper.
Yeah, so guilt is a natural response. It has its cons. It's not the most negative of emotions. It's a natural response when you do something and then later on you go, oh, that was maybe not the best decision right there. And then you experience guilt. In an ideal situation, you see it, you address it, you go, okay, I'm feeling guilty because this happened and it goes against what I really kind of want to be doing. And then you work on improving it. But yeah, shame, it can definitely, if unchecked, it can become like this identity. Like, I am a terrible person. I am unworthy. I have no value. So it can definitely get into that sort of territory. I work with a lot of people on really challenging these things that we tell ourselves. Oftentimes we don't even notice we're telling ourselves these things, and it requires a little bit of digging. Like, I'll ask people, okay, so where does that come from? And what do you think that means? And like with a good amount of digging, give them the little garden. I think trust me, it's coming back in a little bit. It's coming back. But like with a little bit of digging, you uncover these really intense beliefs. And then you have to ask yourself, how accurate is this? Does this help me at all? And if it doesn't, what can I do with this? Can I just kind of go, okay, goodbye? Or, you know, can I adjust it in some way? Or, you know, like it really depends on what it is.
I know there was, oh, I'm sorry, Mike, go ahead.
This may be like too early to start asking questions, but I think what you were saying about obviously sharing it with the community is super, super important. But how can people who maybe are embarrassed about sharing this get over that fear? Because especially if you feel like you are a terrible person, you are constantly doing bad things, you know, this narrative, it must be really, really difficult to share this with someone else because you must be absolutely terrified that they're going to judge you. So do you have any sort of tips that people can use maybe to get over this fear?
Well, before I would encourage anyone to talk to someone else if their anxiety level about it is like that high where they're like super stressed out about it, I work with them first on their own of challenging what it is that they feel about themselves. So I, let's say, oh my God, it's an example of something to be ashamed of. All right, let's do like a body shame thing, because I think almost everybody encounters some situation where they feel shame about their body, they feel that it's gross, they feel it doesn't look good, all these types of things. So I work with them of what is it that you're telling yourself, where did you get those messages from, who told you it, when did they tell you it, today what is your feeling about it, does it help you, does it not? And then over time I even work with maybe some affirmations of like, I am gorgeous, I am sexy, I may have like maybe like a little bit of a little chicho, a little chunk over here, a little hair over here, I'm still worthy of love and I'm gorgeous, you know? So I work, do a lot of work with people. It's a slow process, I'm not gonna lie. Like I tell people often, be patient with yourself, have realistic expectations of how long these processes can take, and don't beat yourself up in the process.
Anytime you're thinking about, okay, I want to talk about some of this stuff, I want to get some support, I would say wherever you've decided to do that, go and check it out first. And like, see if that person or that support group or whatever, like, look at how they respond to other people talking about difficult things. Maybe you start out with something that's just a little, like, this is a little embarrassing, or I'm going to take some, like, share something that's low risk. And you pay attention to how people respond so that you can evaluate, is this a place that feels safe and where I want to share more of that stuff? I think sometimes when people get motivated, like, oh, I want to talk about this, that we can make the mistake of oversharing. And then it's like too much, you feel too vulnerable, and then retreat and never want to share again. And so you miss out on the opportunity of having that empathy and connection with other people who get it. So yeah, I mean, these support groups, these meetings, you know, anywhere that you might go, like go first as an observer and just kind of see, take the temperature and see if it's a place where you think you would feel comfortable.
Now, if I can, Priya, I think you said that guilt was kind of a natural thing. One of the things that I heard that almost sounds like it's a myth is that it didn't exist until like the Catholics invented guilt or something like that. But it sounds like, and it actually kind of makes sense, that guilt is a very natural response in us. Am I off on that? What do you think?
I'd say it's natural if it's that you're doing something that goes against your own values. So like, I have a tendency of using it as almost like to guide me towards directions. Okay. So like if I do something and I feel guilty about it, I sit down and I kind of take a look at it and be like, okay, why am I feeling guilty about this? It's like, and then I kind of be like, oh, okay, it's because I did something that I didn't really want to do, or that the reaction wasn't what I was hoping for. And then I'm like, and I kind of blame myself for it. And then I kind of venture into shame land. So it can be a good motivator to try to figure out what it is that you really want in your life and what makes you happy. And it can be useful if you know how to address it in a healthy way and you don't let it kind of like the whole weed example of like just like get out of control and just like take control of everything.
So if I understand correctly, a healthy sort of guilt could be if you do something that goes specifically against your own values, whereas if it's unhealthy or if it's unproductive, is if you do an action, I don't know how you say it, but that goes against a sort of irrational fear of judgment, maybe, of it could be an all-knowing God, it could be your community, but it's not something that is necessarily that you feel like, if you think about it, it's wrong, it's just that you feel like it's wrong.
So a lot of my work goes into analyzing how we feel and really taking a look at, so there's a cognitive distortion where it's called emotional reasoning, where because I feel something is a certain way, that makes it true, that makes that certain way that I'm feeling an accurate, factual thing. And I do a lot of work of like really picking that apart of like, okay, so you felt like everybody hates you, for example. How much evidence do we really have about that? Is that really something that's happening, or is it something that you're feeling? So those same strategies can be used when it comes to like religion, and especially someone who's still struggling with this idea that like God is watching me. Be like, okay, so based on what you know now, is this really accurate? Like, do you, is it possible that you can kind of not make yourself feel guilty over doing things when you know there's no reason to? And it takes a while. Again, it's a process. So it can be done. It's just, it takes a bit of work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you. So one of the very, very big topics that ex-religious people face is guilt or regrets about things that they used to do when they were religious. Do you have any examples of this? And do you have any techniques on how to overcome these feelings?
The things that come to mind most are from my own experience, right? But maybe I feel embarrassed about that time when I tried to like be a missionary to my friend in high school. I'm like, oh, I feel guilty about that. Or maybe I'm regretful of how much time I spent, how much money I donated to the religious organization, or, you know, any number of things. The crucifix tattoo I have, I don't have one, but just like as an example, right? Something that you said or did that you wouldn't do now. And I think if we take what Priya said about guilt being a natural response to us living against our values, it would make sense that you've gone through a shift in values when you leave religion. And so stuff that didn't bother you before would bother you now. I wouldn't make that mistake again. Of course, there are some things when you look back on your own life that you're gonna feel guilty or regretful about. And the thing to do, I think maybe like tip number one, is don't get stuck in shame. That place where you go, I'm such an idiot, right? Where to build on what Priya was saying, like if guilt is feeling bad about an action, it's feeling bad about something that you did or said, and shame is feeling bad about yourself, who you are as a person, like at your core. And so I can make a distinction there where maybe I feel bad about what I did. I wouldn't make that same mistake again, but I'm gonna try not to get caught in shame about like, well, therefore I am so awful. And so what I would encourage people to do is to like have compassion and empathy for that person that you were. I was, something that I come back to for myself is like, I was doing the best that I could at the time. When I made those mistakes, when I said those things, I was sincere in it. And I can have compassion. Even if it was, if I now think that those things were misguided, I can have some empathy for that younger version of me. You could also look at just real honestly, like I was living, when I made those choices, I was living according to the values that I had at the time. It presented the same thing, I would do something different. And maybe there's a place there where you even get to feel a little bit good about yourself to say, what I know about myself is I am a person who is consistent with my values. My values have shifted, but that still is true of me, that I try to live according to like my highest and best. And you know, maybe there's a place there where you can look at, if it wasn't, you know, if I wouldn't make those choices again, that maybe I was confused. Maybe I was being lied to. Maybe I was being pressured in some way, and that's not entirely my fault. So some of that guilt or regret that you feel might not fully belong to you because you were being influenced by forces that were bigger than you. And like, that's okay too.
I've heard that, you know, give yourself the benefit of the doubt. Like, I did the best I could with the information I had at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And another thing that I do is I like this idea of paying it forward. So if we're going to work through some kind of like forgiveness of ourself, right? I was doing the best that I could at the time. I have compassion for who that person is. And maybe there's a way that I take this experience and I transfer it into some kind of kindness for another person. So whether that's that you, when someone approaches you about an invitation to go to church, or you have some, you know, missionary people knock on the door, you're just polite to them. Doesn't mean you have to invite them in and listen to their message, but you can be kind because you understand that they are just doing the best that they can with what they have. You know, recently I had some people from the church locally sending stuff to one of my kids. And my initial response was like, oh, I was really angry about it. Just like, stop. But then putting myself in the shoes of that other person, I'm like, you know what? When I was that person who was in the church and was trying to do the outreach to the people who don't come very much or whatever, like, I was doing it sincerely and honestly. And so what I chose to do as a way to kind of integrate all of this and also be kind to my former self is to just be polite and kind in how I respond back, how I say, please don't do that anymore. Because again, that's consistent with who I am as a person. And that's a part that hasn't changed, even though my religious values have changed.
And you're not going to hurt anybody by not being an asshole. So I really love what you're saying about, you know, just don't be a horrible person to other people, because maybe you also were that person a few years back, and they may also have like a way out of their situation. And the I don't know, I don't want to say mind control, but you know what I mean, like brainwash kind of situation that they're in.
So let's talk a little bit more about decisions that we made based on religion and how that can impact us. So for a lot of people, while they're in religion, a lot of their decisions are basically either made for them, or their religion heavily influences what they do. So this could extend to where they went to school, what job they chose to pursue, how many children they had, if they even, you know, if they, maybe before they didn't necessarily want to have children, but like if your religion basically says you're going to have some children, well, then they went ahead and had some children. It may have dictated when they got married or who they were married to. So once we're outside of that situation, we kind of reflect all of those decisions. We often feel intense guilt to the point of going into, again, the shame of like, again, like Rebecca was saying, like, I'm so stupid. How could I have done this? And we start kind of like really going into that whole shame spiral. So the longer you're in that faith, oftentimes the harder it is to kind of cope with all of these feelings. And oftentimes, you know, the intensity of them can be really, really difficult to overcome, which is, again, where the silence comes in, the judgment comes in, all of these like really, really damaging things happen. So one thing that we can work on is acceptance. And part of the acceptance is realizing that, unfortunately, no, we cannot change the past. We can't go back and undo the things that we have done. However, you can make changes now. Like, you can make decisions now based on the information that you have available to you in this like new position that you have in your life and your new view of the world. And you can be the version of you that you want to be moving forward. So I do a lot of work with acceptance. Oftentimes people can kind of get like an interesting opinion on what the word acceptance is. I think a lot of people think acceptance means thinking that something's okay, and you're kind of like saying, oh yeah, this happened to me and this is fine. And it's not necessarily that. It's just saying this is what happened to me, or these are the decisions that I made. This was where I was in my life, and that's what it was. And again, it's kind of saying I made the best decisions I could given the information that I had. And I cannot beat myself up anymore because of that. So at least when it comes to the type of therapy that I practice, it has like three parts. It's unconditional self-acceptance, other acceptance, and life acceptance. So it's a process, and it's kind of working with like your feelings towards yourself, feeling towards others, and then just feelings towards the world and like the whole situation. So yeah, like, I work with a lot of people that say things like, oh, the whole thing was just unfair and it doesn't make sense. And how could this have happened? And we kind of unpack all of those feelings. Anger is a common emotion that happens, and there's nothing wrong with anger. I'm not going to sit here and be all like, you're not allowed to be angry. No, like, if you are angry, express your anger. I much prefer people express it rather than bottle it up inside, because it's going to come out in some way, shape, or form eventually. So I encourage anyone to take a look at your anger and, like Rebecca was saying, put it where it belongs instead of directing it towards yourself and making you the bad guy of the story of like, oh my God, I made all the worst decisions ever. I'm a terrible person. Just if you want to, everyone has like their own opinion on it in terms of like who you would really direct the anger towards. You can direct it towards like the religious institutions themselves for what they've been doing. Some people direct it more towards people in their lives, like family and friends, depending on the relationship you have with them and how they treated you and all these types of things like that. It really depends on the situation. It's kind of hard to be like, just curse out everybody, because, you know, you may have had supportive friends and family that were still in the religion. So I'm not going to say like, screw them all. But, you know, if you're angry at the church, be angry at the church. There's nothing wrong with expressing your anger. I just encourage you to do it in a healthy way, process it, get it out. And then like really take a look at like, okay, how can I move forward from here and not let the anger become this like enveloping emotion? Because some people, I feel, they can get into that territory of just becoming just angry at everything, and just life itself becomes something that makes them angry. So we don't really want to get there. It can happen. And if it does, again, don't beat yourself up about it. Happens to many, 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 many people. Just
feel so guilty about getting angry, though.
But it's how do you not get angry? Like it would be weird to me almost for someone to be like, well, they controlled every decision I made for 30 years, meh, and just be like totally cool with it. I think it makes sense to have some, whether it be sadness, anger, frustration, some sort of emotion is going to come from it. So figure out which one is yours. And I would say therapy is really helpful here. Like sometimes like support groups are amazing. However, sometimes you do need the support of an actual therapist that will sit and listen and help you process all those emotions and really find maybe healthy outlets for all these emotions, whether it be writing something, talking to somebody, going somewhere, whatever it is. It could be different for everybody.
So many of us were taught, especially kind of growing up in religion, that anger is a bad thing, that it's wrong. And kind of after this discussion and thinking it through, it may seem to be viewed that told that anger is wrong might be a kind of a control mechanism or something like that. I don't know. It's kind of what came to my mind as we were thinking about it. That's probably an entirely different RFRX than not one about guilt and regret.
Yeah. As someone who I can't speak today, sorry. I struggle with anger a lot. It's a feeling that I experience a lot of times for very small things, not necessarily have to do with religion, but other things. And I can recommend, and I'm not sure if this is therapy approved, you guys can tell me, but sport helps so much, and specifically boxing or some sort of like martial art. There is something so healing about punching something, obviously without hurting anyone else. It's like a punching bag or something. It's just such an amazing outlet because you really can focus all your energy and all your attention in just that one thing. So if this is something that you feel like you're, I don't know, that is kind of not controlling you, but it's like this overwhelming feeling of anger, I highly recommend sport because it's just, I don't know, I feel like it works so well with me. So yeah, I'm not sure if this is something that our beautiful and amazing therapists can back up or if I'm completely wrong and it's just a completely individual thing.
That's amazing.
I agree.
I can't remember. There was a little bit where there was a place that you could literally rent and go and break stuff. Like, you could pay, like, I don't know how much it was, and you'd go and just, like, they had, like, baths, and they had, like, glasses and plates and TVs, and just go in there and just, and amazingly therapeutic, because it can be very, like, cathartic, and just like, just get all that emotion out. So, yeah, sports are great.
Yeah. It doesn't mean you're a bad person because you express your anger. Like, we all feel anger. Feel free to let it out in a healthy way. And if that means breaking something, break something. That's fine.
Just, you know, maybe put it in like a bag or something so pieces don't fly, you know. I encourage the whole, you know, pillow punching. Don't punch walls if you can avoid it, please, because that kind of hurts. But yeah, like, find what works for you. And ideally, something, like I said, that won't hurt you in the process would be nice. So, you know, just beat the crap out of some pillows.
If I can just, like, hop on here, I think there's why that stuff is really helpful. One of them is that when you're expressing the whatever, I mean, we're talking about anger, but it really is whatever feeling you're feeling, you're really allowing yourself to acknowledge it. And the only way, like, to the other side of it is through it. And sometimes when we feel feelings that are unwanted, uncomfortable, overwhelming, we don't want to feel that way. And so we shy away, which just pushes it down. It doesn't make it go away. And so it's kind of paradoxical that the way to reduce the intensity of those unwanted feelings is to really just let yourself feel and experience them, which is why some of that stuff feels so great. It's because you're really letting yourself acknowledge the truth of what's happening to you and how you feel. The other thing on the physical stuff is that when you do whatever kind of exercise that gets your heart rate up and, you know, your things pumping in your body a little bit, muscles tense, and then you relax at the end, you're actually completing your body's natural stress response cycle. And so it allows you to reset back to calm and normal. And so you're totally right on, but like, yeah, when I'm feeling stuff, I go do something physical and that makes me feel better. Like, yeah, that's your body working, right? And you, like, tapping into that.
I love that you're saying that, and to just reassure me that I haven't been engaging in self-destructive behavior all my life. So thank you. That's great. So do you have any other comments in regard to this topic, or should we move on to the next big topic?
I want to say one more thing, just because I feel so much for our folks who made huge life decisions based on religion, the stuff that's like who you married and how many kids you have and these like big things that you can't undo, right? If you find yourself just in a place where you're stuck and you're kind of like looping and rolling, running around and around and around that thing, and you just can't quite seem to make sense of it, therapy is super helpful for that kind of stuff. I'm getting trained in a methodology called brain spotting that's really helpful for getting that old stuff unstuck. The stuff that like cognitively doesn't make sense, but it's really deeply emotional and impacting you. So if you're a person who is in that kind of a place, please don't be hesitant to reach out or to do whatever little legwork you need to do to find a competent person that can help you. Because when you're in it, it feels like there's no getting out of it. And I also know from helping other people through that stuff that you can get to a place where you feel some like acceptance and peace and hope for the future.
Yeah, and I feel like, and this is the last thing I'll say about the topic, sorry, I feel like this is getting super long, but obviously there are some things that you can't change that you have done in the past, such as, you know, having children or getting married with X person or whatever, but there are some things that you can change. Like, I know a recurrent regret of ex-religious people is that they maybe didn't go into further education when they were younger. And I just would like to remind everyone that if you can afford to, it's never too late to go to university or go to different academies or schools or, I don't know, whatever system works in your country. So it's not like, you know, you've done something that you regret and then you can't do anything about it. Like, oftentimes you can kind of, not completely change it, but at least do something that I don't know, benefits you somehow.
Moves your direction and moves your life in the direction you want it to go.
Exactly. Cool. So the next big topic that we have is how can we get over guilt as a habit or as a conditioned response to certain behaviors. So what is your input on that?
I'm actually really glad this is in here because this is something I struggle with. Like guilt has sometimes become a habit and it almost feels comfortable, as in as weird as that may sound, it almost feels comfortable to be in it because it's scary to not be in it. Is this kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah. You're going to see me like nerd out a little bit here with this one. I'm excited about it.
Let me get my lightsaber and my Enterprise model and we can nerd out together.
Okay. Just in totally different ways.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we're going to talk a little bit about your brain and what happens in your brain. So there's this saying that neurons that fire together wire together. So when two things happen in connection or simultaneously, they'll become connected in our brains because our brains are really efficient at processing information and look for shortcuts. So if these two things or two habits or whatever happen, you know, sequentially or simultaneously, those things become connected in your brain so that they're almost indistinguishable. And this happens in a whole bunch of different ways, and most of the time it's awesome. If you think about something like learning to write your letters, you have like a kindergartner, right? And they will, like, you have to teach the child where to start, and then you move the pen down, and then you do this thing in this shape, and it goes in that order, and no adult thinks like that. But at one point you had to be taught that carefully. Or something like I learned to drive on a manual transmission car. And I still drive one. Brian's face is like, why? And you have to push with your left foot, you push the clutch in to start the car. And so for me, this like motion of turning the key, I always push my left foot down on the floor because that was just habit. And when you first learn to drive, there's all of these things that you have to consciously think and remember. And now when I get in an automatic car, I don't even notice it, but I push my left foot down on the floor of the car when I start it. There's no clutch pedal there, and it actually doesn't cause me any harm, but those two actions are so connected in my brain that the one happens when I do the other. And this is how a lot of our religious guilt has been conditioned into us. So if we take an example like sexual arousal. So this is a natural body response. You're going through puberty, you're a young adult, whatever, your body becomes aroused. You combine that with teachings that you've received from your religious group about sexual purity and your own desire to live according to the values that you were taught. Those things added up means that you feel guilt and shame, and you likely want to not feel that way. And so the conclusion that you make is, I need to change the way that I'm acting. I need this body to just stop having those feelings already, like whatever, okay? But over time, that becomes so conditioned that you might get to a point where sexual arousal happens and you immediately feel shame. The other parts of that puzzle have been shortcut so that the one means the other. Is that making sense, kind of how that happens?
Yeah, it does make sense. And I think I read somewhere that people who are religious, after they get married, that this is a massive issue that they have in their marriage life because they can't seem to be able to have sex without having this overwhelming feeling of shame that sex is wrong and, you know, they're going to hell and all of this baggage, I guess.
Right, that you can't live 20 or 25 or 30 years believing that sex is wrong, and then one day to the next, even from the morning to the evening on the wedding day, and now it's supposed to be okay and I'm supposed to love it and enjoy it. It just doesn't happen that way.
I kind of like that because I've heard a story where like some university was granted, built this brand new building and, you know, all this landscaping, and they didn't know where to put they didn't necessarily want to just put in sidewalks. And so they left all the landscaping and let people kind of walk to and from classes. And wherever the dirt paths were, the most worn paths were, that's where they put that's where they put the solid sidewalks in, solid walkways in. So it, I can totally see that connecting. It's just as like the shortest, instead of having to walk all the way around it, it just eventually became a shortcut. You get sexual arousal and then you get shame. And that's, I hate to say it, but that's something that I definitely struggle with too.
Yeah, so the great news in all of this is that our brains can form new connections and you can form new neural pathways. That's what's exciting here. So part of what that looks like is to stop and like break that down. So in the example I had, okay, you have this plus this plus this equals I feel guilt and shame. So when you feel that guilt or shame, stop and ask yourself like, okay, so why? These are the questions that Priya was asking before. Where did you get that idea? And do you even believe it anymore? And essentially what you're doing there is you're cutting a new path across the grass. This was actually, I don't know if you looked ahead, Eric, but like that was the analogy I was going to use.
Oh, was it?
The path in the woods. Yes. You're perfect. It's totally perfect. Okay. So at first, it won't feel easy or natural to be like forging this new path through the woods. It's a little different than like walking across a lawn, right? But if you're thinking about like a hiking trail or something, like it's hard. And the more that you do this in helping, like encouraging yourself to think about these things in new ways and to break that pattern of feeling guilty about things that you no longer want to feel guilty about, you'll get to a point where either of those paths feels equally accessible to you. They're both equally worn. Maybe one of them, there's both paved sidewalks now. You could go either way and you can choose. And the more that you pick the new neural pathways that you want to reinforce, that I don't live under guilt, I am a good person, I don't get caught in this shame, then that starts to be the path that's maintained and that's easier to walk. Even though the old one might always be accessible to you. Without thinking too hard about it, you could catch yourself on the old path again, but you can also come back to the path that you want to be on, the way that you want to think about things. Mm-hmm. And we get caught up in this stuff super easy. I remember a client that I was working with was saying something about their sexuality, and I just like, this comes up and I go to kiss my partner and it's like, I can hear my parents' voice warning me that I'm going to go to hell. And I'm so worried about it. And I was like, okay. I seem to remember you saying something before about how you like, don't believe in an afterlife. And my client stopped and like kind of smiled and like laughed a little bit and was like, yeah, I don't. I don't know why this is a thing. But it was like, that person needed this reminder of you don't have to stay on that path of shame. Like you can choose this other way. And it turned into a little, you know, humorous moment. Just be so patient with yourself while you're going through this.
Oh my gosh. That could be guilty if you're not guilty getting it quick enough and just sort of reinforce it. Like you're, and you avoid kind of doing the rewiring behavior.
Exactly. And I think that I'm glad that you're laughing, because that was like having a sense of humor about it is something that is super helpful with whatever that looks like for your particular situation. If you can laugh about, oh, I got caught in that place again. Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think that as you're trying to, when we're so used to this one way of thinking and these, you know, pattern or conditioned ways of responding to whatever the situation is that leaves you feeling guilt, it can be hard to imagine what another way looks like, because the way that you know is so, like that path is so well worn that you don't even know what another way of thinking about it looks like. So I have a couple suggestions for that. One of those is, I think it's great to just be open to the perspectives of trusted other people. Talk to people who didn't come from your same religious background. Ask them questions about things, read books, listen to podcasts, whatever. I remember an ex-Mormon friend who we were both kind of transitioning out of the church at similar times. She had a Jewish therapist who she said was tremendously helpful to her, because as she would go in and talk about all this religious stuff that she just presumed was like normal and everyone's experience, her therapist would be like, wait, what? Huh? Can you say that again? Is that really how? Oh, and it was eye-opening to my friend that not everybody thought that way. And she got to have a different experience just to see that there's another way to view some of these situations. There's another way to respond to those types of situations, right? Whatever.
Yeah, that you're not breaking some like obvious universal value of like, don't kill people or something like that.
Right, right. And I think that even just taking the time to imagine, like a little kid, like play pretend, imagine what it would be like if you didn't feel guilty about this thing. Or if you were able to, you know, on a Sunday comes around or a Saturday or whatever the holy day was and you don't mark it at all, what would that actually look like if you were freed from that guilt? If you could see somebody from your old religious community and not be like, oh, you know, what would you be doing instead? And this is helpful, one, so that you can start to even map out, like, what's this new path that I'm trying to form?
Oh.
And it also, like, builds on this concept called predictive encoding, where you're priming your brain to be able to recognize that thing when it comes up. If we haven't told our brain what we want to see happen or what are the opportunities that we want to capitalize on, you won't recognize them when they come up. So when you take a little bit of time to just kind of imagine, what actually would it be like if I was freed from this guilt and shame? How would I talk with my religious parents if I didn't have this guilt over me all the time? When you let yourself think about what that might look like, then when the opportunity to behave in that way presents itself, you'll be more likely to do it. You at least have a compass bearing of where it is that you're trying to go in forming this new path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that you're saying that, because also it must get you quite excited about life more so than, you know, having this perspective that it's always going to be that way and that there is nothing that you can do about it. And imagining what life would be if that wasn't the case.
Right. It's much more hopeful than being stuck in, I wish that I didn't have this guilt.
Mm-hmm. So we mentioned a little bit about the sexual guilt and shame. And I know that that is something that really comes up quite often in the support groups. And I suspect just as often in the helpline as well. Can either one of you speak to that, perhaps? Like, I know that we touched on it a little bit, but can we go any further in depth?
Sure. So, again, this is Priya. My area that I'm incredibly passionate about is sex therapy. So let's start off with just like a little fun fact. I may mispronounce this word. If I do, I'm sorry. I'm working on it. How many of you have heard of the word pudendum?
Never. Yeah.
So it's an old word from like the mid 17th century. It's used to describe a person's external genitalia, usually used to describe a cisgender woman's vulva. The literal translation is that whereof one ought to feel shame. So back in the day, the idea was that a woman's genitalia is not visible from the outside because she feels guilty and ashamed of her genitalia, therefore it feels the need to hide itself. Whereas male genitalia does not need to feel ashamed, therefore it's on display. So just a little fun fact to kind of get to, you know, to show how like sexual guilt and shame has been around for centuries, millennia. Unfortunately, we are in 2020 and today, people still experience a really high level of like guilt and shame when it comes to either their bodies, sexual activities that they want to engage in, who they're attracted to, or lack thereof. Not everybody is a very sexual being, and then they feel they should be behaving in certain ways, and then they feel guilty over not behaving in certain ways. So a lot of my work, again, goes into unpacking where all these beliefs come from. So I do a lot of work in where going back a little bit into like childhood and really taking a look, okay, who taught you these things? What messages were you taught? The same thing, like, you know, sometimes a voice will pop into people's heads when they might want to start, like, let's say they want to start masturbating, and then there comes mom's voice in your head of like, you shouldn't be doing that. And then they, you know, they don't do it. So they experience all this type of guilt about it. I swear to you, the garden metaphor is just going to be our thing now. So one of my favorite books about sex and just like the topic of sex and just like unpacking all these things is Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski. So she has a garden metaphor in her book. So she explains that, like, okay, so let's imagine when you're a child, you are given a beautiful, fertile piece of land. And this is your sexual identity, your feelings about yourself, your body, all these lovely things. So when you're a child, people came in and planted all the things that they felt needed to be planted in that little piece of land. So this could be your parents, family members, the church, society, culture, all these things. So they planted all these lovely things for you. And then when you became, let's say, a teenager, they went, here you go. Now it's your job to take care of this. And then you get it and you look at it and you go, what is this? I don't want any of this. And, you know, you may have to do the job of really going through that and seeing, okay, I don't believe in this. This is not helpful for me. This is not who I am. And, you know, it can, again, be a process. But I love that metaphor. I think it's so amazing. And it just makes it so clear. Because, yeah, like a lot of us were taught certain things about ourselves, our bodies, our sexualities that honestly are insanely inaccurate or just really harmful. So I do talk to a lot of people that are at an age where I think by, you know, society standards, we think they should have certain knowledge about certain things. And then they come and they're like, I haven't the faintest clue what I'm doing. I've never explored my body. I am completely unaware of what's even down there because I've never allowed myself because the idea of it was just so frightening to me. So, I'm just going to list off some areas that through the process of like, so I practice sex therapy. So in sex therapy, we go and we discuss all sorts of things. So I'm going to list off some topics that generally people come in and they report these topics can cause some sort of guilt or shame, or they're some way kind of linked. So first off is their bodies. So a lot of people experience guilt or shame related to the shape of their body, the size, hair, smells, sounds, fluids, the face that they make when they have an orgasm, if they can or cannot orgasm. Some people come in reporting that they have a high level of stress because they can't do certain things that they feel they should be able to do. So the body itself is a huge source of guilt and shame for a lot of people. Generally, we kind of gear that towards like cisgender women. We feel like that group experiences the most, but in reality, it's across the board. It's not just cisgender women. So another huge area is fantasies. So oftentimes people come in expressing a high level of guilt or the type of fantasy that they have. So it could be who they're fantasizing about because they feel that the only person they can fantasize about is their partner. And they go like, I was like having sex with my partner and I was thinking about, I don't know, some celebrity, I don't know, freaking Vin Diesel, whoever, I don't know, whoever, I don't know, whatever. Not my type, but whatever. Anyway, so they'll also have guilt and shame over like when they have a fantasy or like when they find themselves having some sort of like sexual idea. A common one I've seen is I have fantasies about things that I would never take part in real life. And then they get so scared and so guilty and think that that means something about them. So we do a lot of work. There's a really great book called Tell Me What You Want by Justin Lemmiller. I may be mispronouncing his name again, pronouncing, not my strength sometimes. So his book, he literally did a study and it was all about fantasy and what do people fantasize about, and you'd be amazed at how many people fantasize about the same thing. And a lot of my work goes into normalizing, because I feel like a lot of people come in, they'd be like, I feel like I'm the only person that ever has ever experienced this fantasy. And I'm like, I don't know about that. You'd be surprised. You know, it's pretty common, and that's okay. There's sexual past. So I like to call it the sexual debut. Like, I'm not a big fan of using the word like losing your virginity and things like that, because again, it kind of goes, it's very tied to like religious beliefs. So I prefer the phrase, you know, their sexual debut. It feels nicer. I like that. It's more dramatic. It's cool. Anyway, so people experience a lot of guilt or shame regarding when the debut was. So whether it was too early, too late, whether it just hasn't happened. So that can be another thing that people may feel some sort of guilt or shame about. The activities that they like engaging in can often cause a lot of guilt or shame. I feel like a lot of people, when they don't seemingly fit into the mold of what society feels they should be doing, that's where they encounter the most types of like guilt and shame, especially when it comes to like, for example, non-monogamy and things like that. I'm, you know, me personally, I'm super into the idea, and I'm glad it's becoming more accepted now, because back in the day, that was just like, you know, like, no way. Like, it was just not a thing. So for a lot of people, what they wanted in their sexual expression was a cause of guilt and shame. Again, also with LGBTQIA, just for a lot of people, if they identify as someone in that community, for a lot of us, when we're like raised in religion, that was just a no-go. Like, that was just not accepted in the slightest. So they ended up either hiding it or trying to bury it or denying it or finding some way to change it, which we now know is just not possible. So a lot of people that I talk to experience a lot of guilt and shame related to that, just like their identity itself, and gender identity. Nowadays, we've been seeing a lot of changes in terms of like gender roles, because back in the day, as a cisgender woman, your role was very clear and there was no moving out of that. And then now we're seeing that people are doing things that back in the day were not accepted in the slightest. So I do a lot of work in, again, exploring where the messages came from. Do you still hold them? How do you feel when they come? Sometimes I'll ask people like physically, because some people have like a physical reaction when they encounter one of these emotions. When it comes to strategies, I tell people like same thing as Rebecca, humor is gigantic. When it comes to sex, I tell people you can't go in so freaking serious. Like you gotta have some sense, because like things happen with sex. It's, you know, you're gonna slip off and smells and things and sounds, like it's just it's normal, it's natural.
I mean, so it's not like the movies, like they like it's just always just amazing. It's not like that. Is that what you're saying?
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. I work with a lot of people that, you know, we have to kind of look at what are your expectations and how realistic are those expectations. For example, if you feel every single time you have sex with someone, you must orgasm, you must. And if you don't, it is a catastrophe and it means the entire thing was trash and I'm a terrible person and I will never, you know, once we start going into that type of thinking, we gotta take a second. Just like, whew, take a breath.
Mm. How much? Yeah, and it has to be also, sorry, go on. it has to be also with the love of your life, and it has to always be super meaningful, super romantic, and it has to be like the most amazing experience of your life. So yeah,
sure.
So many unrealistic expectations.
And you know, if that's your cup of tea, cool, but I encourage people to be flexible with it. You know, like not every single time is gonna look the same way, and that's not a bad thing. So I tell people, like when it comes to sex, sexuality, your body, all these types of things, come in with humor, curiosity, and flexibility. Go into things kind of like, let me explore a little bit. I love throwing the word adventure around. Anything that stresses me out, I call it an adventure. Everything's an adventure. And then it just kind of makes everything just a little bit more palatable for me. Instead of saying like, oh, this is going to be a horrendous experience, it's an adventure. All right, let's see how it goes. Focus on pleasure. Too many people are focused on goals.
Okay. That makes sense. So it's like more about the journey and less about the destination is kind of what you're saying.
Yeah. And then if you get to your destination on the way, bonus points. Good for you. Love it. We love to see it. However, the more focused you are on this is the way it has to be and it has to look this and it has to be this certain way and it has to feel this kind of, you know, once you get into that mode of thinking, it really can cause more problems than it can help. Because like sex ideal is something that you do because you want to and it feels good and it's a stress reliever and it just boosts your mood and it helps you sleep and it helps all these wonderful things. So when you bring all this anxiety into it, it just kind of like, makes it more difficult. Evaluate how realistic is your expectations. Remember, not everyone reacts to certain things the same way. So for example, you know, not everyone is turned on by the same things, and that's okay. I normalize like you wouldn't even believe when I talk to people. Like, it's okay. Like, it doesn't have to look like everybody else does. So I think the media partly is to blame with the whole, like, you know, like I said, like everything is, it's got to look like, you know, just music and the wind and the looking each other's eyes, you know, like not everybody needs that. Not everybody wants that. That's fine. Let me see. Oh, my favorites. Be mindful of your shoulds, need tos, have tos, and musts. I love that little group of words. Whenever I hear that little group of words, my little antenna starts going up. I go, is that really true? Do you need to do it this way? And do you need this? Or is it a preference? So I love to kind of encourage people to kind of be, well, I would highly prefer to have a partner that does certain things with me. And I would prefer to do it like once a week. But if it doesn't happen, is it a catastrophe? Is it a crisis? Is it like the worst thing ever? No, I might feel uncomfortable. I might feel upset. I might feel frustrated. Are those reasonable emotions? Are they manageable for me? Yeah. Okay. All right. So we can kind of work with that. Take some time to get to know your body. No matter how old you are, it is not too late to do a little self-exploration. Get to know yourself. We change over time. The body you have now is in no way, shape, or form the body you had 10, 20, 30 years ago, you know, depending on how old you are. So take some time, get to know it. You know, like, I keep hearing all this thing of like, how are you going to teach somebody how to do certain things that you like if you don't even know how to do certain things you like to yourself? You know, it just kind of like, so get to know yourself and it's okay. Like, I feel like a lot of people, masturbation is a huge taboo and it's a huge stigma that they have. So I do a lot of work with people around what their view of masturbation is, what their view of porn is. A lot of people have a really negative view of porn. It doesn't have to be. Like, if you have a really negative view of porn because of like, you feel that the performers are treated unjustly, watch some ethical porn. It totally exists. There's tons of porn. There's feminist porn, you know, like go for it. You can totally find things out there that don't have the whole like male centered way that porn is classically kind of, you know, we could have a whole talk about that. But anyway, so to kind of like wrap it up. So I am a fan of, see, again, pronunciation. Someone can jump in and correct me on this.
Nihilism.
I always mess up that freaking word every single time. Anyway, I'm a fan of like optimistic nihilism. So if this is the only chance I get, this is my only body that I'm going to have, my only experience on this freaking planet, I want to experience all the pleasure I possibly can as long as it's done in a safe, consensual way. And it makes me feel good and I'm happy. At least that's my philosophy. I would encourage others to kind of find their own version of that, you know, whatever comfort level you have of that. But I very strongly encourage people to experience it to the level that you want to. Like, if you don't have an interest in certain things, cool. You don't have to do things that you don't want to do. However, if the reason you don't want to do it is because you feel that you cannot, because someone told you you cannot, then I would take a look at that.
Oh, I see. Okay. So it's you're kind of exploring the reason why you can't do something, whether I don't like it or I heard it from somewhere else.
Yeah. Certain things may not be your cup of tea, and that's cool. But I would probably work on challenging, like, if you don't do it because you feel that it's disgusting and dirty because that's what you were told as a child, then I would kind of take a look at that. Like, how accurate is it? And it may still not be your cup of tea. It may, like, honestly just not be. But let's not automatically be like, oh, because I was told this as a child, it makes it true that this is a terrible thing to do and nobody should be doing this.
It sounds like guilt trip, that, you know, the gift that keeps on giving.
So we are kind of running out of time, but I do want to mention one last thing about the whole sexual guilt thing, because, and obviously you can correct me if this is not true, but I've read that a lot of asexual people who are also religious feel very blessed before they're married because they feel like they don't have this curse or this sort of struggle that is sexual temptation. But then once they get married, they realize that that's not going to change and that they just don't want to have sex with their partners. So if there is any asexual people listening to us, that is also okay. If you don't want to have sex, that is also fine. Like, it's completely your choice. You don't have to have sex. You don't have to enjoy sex. If you don't, that is completely okay. Just as a little note before we move on.
If you don't mind, we can wrap it up with, like, guilt trips. I think that is a powerful, powerful way that cultures or groups of people or societies can pressure individuals into doing things they may not want to do. And I know I've experienced in the past, and I have even used that quote unquote tool in the past to get some things completed or done. Let's talk about that for just real quick, if we can.
Yeah, so to start out with, I would say, go watch the talk I did on boundaries a while back, because a lot of being able to successfully resist a guilt trip is about being really clear and having good boundaries about what's my stuff and what's someone else's stuff. So you can go watch the RFRX that we did on setting boundaries. I can't remember what exactly we called it. But it's, yeah, anyway, it's like saying no when your parents want to give you things or invite you to things, whatever.
I'll find it and get it posted.
Okay, thank you. So let's just be really clear here that someone can try to give you guilt and you can choose not to take it in. So
wait, what?
I love that.
You can say, you know what, that is your thing. I don't actually believe that. I don't want to feel that way. And you can choose not to take the guilt that they're trying to heap on you. And it's really kind of empowering to think about answering this question. You didn't do, or you did whatever. Don't you feel bad about that? No, I don't. I don't. That thing does not match my values. And so, no, I don't feel guilty that I did whatever or I didn't do the other thing, right? And my last suggestion on dealing with guilt trips is to be precise in your language about what you say to yourself about what's going on. Because it's not like you can say, that person's trying to give me a guilt trip and I don't believe it, and that you're then going to feel nothing. That's just that simple. It probably will trigger a bunch of other feelings in you and stuff that you have to deal with. So let's look at something like, maybe you choose not to go to the family gathering that's centered around a religious holiday this year, or you know, we'll just go with that, okay? And maybe you think that you should feel guilty about not going, or maybe your family is putting a lot of pressure on you, like you need to be here because of whatever reason, right? And the question I would have you ask yourself is, what are you really, really feeling here? And is guilt the most accurate word? I didn't go to the religious-based family gathering around the holiday. Do I really feel guilty about that? Guilty in the sense that this is against my values. There might be a tiny bit of like, I'm not with my family, and being with my family is a value. And so maybe I feel a little bit of guilt or regret about that. And that's okay to acknowledge. This is what it is. Maybe next year I'll emotionally be in a better place that I can attend the gathering. Or maybe I go to all the other gatherings, just not the one that's the religious holiday. And so I am actually living in alignment with my values. I just don't share their religious values, okay? But you might also feel grief. You might be feeling loneliness. You might be feeling sadness. And that's more accurate for how you're feeling about not being at that gathering.
Okay. All right. So I kind of identifying the emotion and kind of working from there.
Yeah. Because you probably feel something. I just want you to get clear on yourself. Is it really guilt? Or is what you're feeling loneliness, betrayal, sadness, anger, whatever. There could be a lot of other things there. And you're best going to know how to handle those when you're clear about what is it that really is going on. And then you can do something about it, right? Or just sit in, yeah, I feel sad. I feel sad that at this time when I wanted to be together with my family, I can't be because it's too triggering for me to hear the reading of the religious texts. I feel sad about that, but I don't feel guilty that I'm not there because I don't believe that.
What about, I often hear in some of the support groups, folks feeling guilty that they're hurting their friends and family for not going to celebrating a religious holiday or going to church or something. Like they feel like they're hurting someone, and that's kind of experiencing guilt. They experience that as guilt.
Yeah. Again, I would say just like break it down into its little parts. Maybe there is a part of you that feels some sadness or regret or guilt because one of my values is that I try not to cause harm. I care about the people that I love, and I feel bad that they're hurting. Maybe that's more compassion than it is really guilt.
Or maybe some grief about a sense of loss of family or a sense of loss of community too.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we go back to what Priya was saying before about really like putting the emotion where it belongs, it's maybe part of why I feel this thing is that I feel angry that we were raised in a religious system that taught us that we can't share these things together, that I don't belong because I don't believe. I don't feel guilty about not believing. That's not my guilt, but I feel angry that this organization teaches my family that they're not allowed to have me there because I don't believe. Like, that's not feeling nothing, but that's being really clear about what is the feeling and where is it coming from. And at the end of the day, that's not about me feeling bad about myself or me feeling bad about my choices, which is what guilt and shame are.
Well, that's pretty awesome. A different way to look at it, for sure.
Yeah.
So you kind of get the power back as opposed to having it be sapped from you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly, because at the end of the day, if I am living a life that is in accordance with my own values and my choices are consistent with my values, I probably don't have too much to feel guilty about.
Got it.
There might be some of those places where I can't live both of my values at the same time and I have to pick one. And so I might feel a little bit of guilt. It's not to say that you would never feel it, but not near to the intensity that we're talking about when people first leave religion and you're experiencing all of this patterned, you know, conditioned guilt and all of the guilt trips from family members and whatever. Like, you really can get to a place where you feel solid in who you are. You feel great about the choices that you're making. You're clear about what your values are. and you also can feel compassion and empathy for other people who are hurting, even though you know that it's not really my fault. Like, I am not intentionally causing this person harm, but maybe it's their belief system about me that's causing that harm.
Got it. Anything else that you wanted to?
No, that was kind of the last facet of the grief, is the grief that you get from others. We talked about sexual shame. We talked about the pattern response and, you know, regret about things that we did or didn't do. And so, yeah, I think we pretty well covered what we had prepared.
This was wonderful. Pri, do you have anything else you want to add before we kind of?
Yeah, that was it.
That's fine. We do have a few questions, so we can just jump straight to the Q&A if everyone is okay with that.
So this was really fantastic discussion. I was watching through the chat, and a lot of people got so much out of it, and really, really appreciate your time here. Before we hop onto the questions, we have, as you guys know, we have a hangout afterwards. Do you guys have a little bit of time you can spend with some of the guests, but before you leave?
Yes, I can see her here.
All right. I like putting the guests on the spot.
Well, you guilt tripping me.
Oh, that's true. Oh, man, you called me on it. That's hilarious. Amaya, why don't you go ahead and start with the first question while I wipe the egg off my face or the fried
dough? Yeah, yeah. Let's all forget what you just did there. Do you have any advice to people, for people who have suffered sexual abuse and now they are kind of struggling with the effects of it? For example, flashbacks, nightmares, any sort of advice, any tips that you can give them?
It's difficult to give advice like that without getting like more information, but definitely I would recommend seeing a therapist. It's one of those things that's really incredibly difficult to really handle on your own, just because you may need to unpack what happened, what didn't happen, and your interpretations of it. It sounds like there may be some anxiety around it going on. So like, there's a lot there. The work that you can do on your own, I would say, is more centered on mindfulness and your body. Like, again, it's kind of hard because I don't have like a whole bunch of information. But people that encounter sexual abuse, It's a process towards trusting your own body, which can be incredibly difficult. It's a process towards being able to trust others, to be able to like being able to put your body basically in the hands of someone else and trust that they will not do something against your wishes and against your consent. So again, my recommendation, talk to a therapist. It's hard when it's not so much information, because I don't like giving broad blanket statements, because it's every case is so different. But I wonder if there's anything. Let me move my chat, because I've been hiding the chat because it's hella distracting. So I would say do a lot of work first and foremost with yourself, your body, trusting it, getting to know yourself again. Look at the messages you're telling yourself or the messages that you are told. Again, nothing that happened is your fault. And I feel like a lot of the people that I've spoken with, that's like the primary message that they struggle to let go of, that the idea that something, that they did something to cause it to happen to them. So I work a lot on challenging those statements. Yeah, it's if the person wants, we can like chat a little bit later on, you know, privately to kind of get a little bit extra info. It's, you know, so just in case. I'm hoping I gave some sort of helpful something. It's kind of hard when it's general.
I would say if you're like, based on just this description, I'm like, it sounds like a trauma. I mean, sex abuse is trauma, but like the flashbacks and bad dreams are probably actively experiencing trauma symptoms. And so if you go looking for a therapist, look for somebody who has a specialization in treating trauma, which might be brain spotting, it might be EMDR, it might be accelerated resolution therapy. Like, there's some good therapy modalities out there for treating trauma. With this type of thing, I would not just go with anybody. I would do a little bit of work to make sure you have a therapist who really knows what they're talking about so that they can support you well.
Preferably, if you can find an ESECT certified therapist, some places it's harder to find them than others. So I've had a lot of people that, like, especially, like, I think, like, more like out west, like, there's like states that maybe have like one. It's like, wow. So it can be a little difficult. Right now, a lot of therapists are offering remote therapy. So that's been super helpful in terms of, like, we're able to see people that maybe before we weren't able to. I think some states allow even, like, over state, like, being able to see somebody in a state that does not, like, I live in New York, and I'm able to see some people that do not live in New York, which is fabulous. But yeah, definitely, I would encourage anyone, if you can see someone that is, that has experience, and when you do, like, your, preferably, like, a consultation, hopefully they have a consultation option, you can ask them, how much experience do you have working with people that have encountered sexual assault? And if they say zero, you may want to find somebody else. Just saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's okay to change therapists once you've started the I don't know if the treatment is the correct, but the sessions, once you have started the sessions, you are absolutely free to change therapists if you feel like it's not working for you.
Mm-hmm. That's just a good fit.
Thank you. Okay, so another question that someone asked is, do you know of any support groups for this specific topic, so related to religious guilt and regret? Is there any that you know of?
Religious guilt and regret regards to sex or in general?
Just in general, as far as I understand the question. I mean, feel free to correct me who wrote this, but that's how I understood it.
Oh my God.
RFRX groups are what come to mind.
Yes, that's an excellent answer. The support groups for recovering from religion, I tell you what, we get those kinds of situations coming up in the support groups quite often. And what we talked about at the beginning, just having a discussion, kind of starting off small and testing the room, feeling, seeing if you feel comfortable talking about more. These are safe spaces. The leaders of the RFR support groups are trained to be not nearly as professionally as Rebecca or Priya, but they're trained to create the safe space and to. Why am I blanking on this? I don't know, to create the safe space and to listen empathetically as well. So if you are near or even like 1,000 miles away from a support group, check it out. And you are free to be anonymous when you join a meeting. You don't have to say anything. You can sit back with your video off and just listen and see if it's right for you. So I know that I was kind of rambling there, but we get this kind of discussion a lot in the RFR support groups.
I am currently, I'm going to say that lightly because I have to, like, really get on that. I'm going to start working on a support group actually for sexuality issues. It hasn't started yet because I got to figure out when, but yeah. I recently, because I finally caved and I made a social media account that's like for my work stuff, which I'm not a huge fan of doing and I kind of suck at it. I'm working on it. But yeah, I'm planning to set up some sort of like a group for this topic. I have seen somebody, I can't remember her name right now. I'm going to have to like look it up, that she runs a group for purity culture dropouts. That I've been like kind of, and I've seen her on Instagram. I gotta like open up my freaking Instagram and like look her up. But I'll drop that in the chat if I can.
Got it.
I would ask that kind of got left out of the talk was using mindfulness to deal with religious guilt and regret is super helpful. Mm. In part because mindfulness helps you get personal distance between what you're feeling, thinking, experiencing, and like yourself, so that you can observe that without really engaging or interacting with it. And so even if you aren't able to find a religious or like a support group dealing with religious guilt and regret, developing a mindfulness practice would be really useful for this issue as well.
That's a great point, yeah. And we've that's come up several times during these RFRX discussions, just mm-hmm. having some mindfulness about the situation. That's interesting. I guess it must work or something. We've got one final question, and I'm gonna kind of read it. I'm a very sexual person. I don't feel ashamed or guilty about sex, but I used to. I still have a hard time reaching orgasm, and I've been told that it may be due to some subconscious guilt or shame. Do you guys have any thoughts about that?
Okay. Come As You Are, fantabulous book. Highly recommend. It is centered for cisgendered women. I'm still looking for books on sexuality that are more for like non-binary trans. They're out there, but I feel like they're not as like widely known. But Come As You Are for a vulva owner, spectacular. Okay. Orgasm. Here's the thing. Not everyone's looks the same. Not everyone is able to reach it the same way. Not everyone experiences it the same way. So again, I take a really good look at what is it that you're expecting, how much effort you're putting into it. Cause like, for example, some people, they have like this unrealistic expectation of like a minute, bam, 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 it should be done. So like when it takes a little longer, they feel that means something. It may not. Some people are just maybe not as sensitive as others. It really depends. For some people, not everyone, but for some people, yeah, it can be related to some sort of like psychological thing that's happening. Of like, again, it can either be a trauma response sometimes. It can be comfort levels with your body. It could be comfort levels with a partner if you're with a partner. It really depends. So I'm like, yay that you're exploring your sexuality. And I want to be like, yes, do this. But yeah, like it may not necessarily have to be. It really depends. Everyone's kind of different. And generally speaking, like, again, it depends. We may have to talk a little bit. Like, what are you? Is it manual? Is it toys? Like, what do you do? How are you doing it? So again, this is part of sex therapy of like the problem solving aspects of like, okay, let's do a little psychoed on this and kind of like be like, okay, so how do you do it? And again, I want to put a little mini parentheses. Sex therapy is not hands-on, and I am not seeing anybody doing anything. It is purely discussion, just in case. So yeah, I just like to put that little parentheses out there, just in case. But yeah, it may not have anything to do with anything. It could be just your sensitivity levels. It could be that you may be a little bit stressed out, and sometimes when we're stressed or we're busy or we're tired or we're just distracted, you know, all these things can impact your ability to have an orgasm. Sometimes we do what's called spectatoring, where we kind of like essentially leave the situation and we start wondering about what we're going to eat for lunch tomorrow in the middle of it. And it can take the mindfulness practice to kind of like zoop, kind of bring you back into your body. So it's common. It doesn't always have to mean anything mega bad. So I always ask people, let's before we jump to like worst case scenario, let's try to take a look at what's really happening, and we can kind of like figure it out that way.
Raya, thank you very much. Rebecca, thank you so much. This was so great.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me again.
Yeah, it's always so fun to have both of you on. I feel so much better after we talked. I mean, you two ladies are so intelligent and just helped me and so many other people kind of get through some of the the stuff that we've been working on for years. So I really, really appreciate it.
Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, healing, and support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.